So Elaine, the way you've set this up, it's okay for this pilot to depart as long as they have a spring-loaded abort plan ready to go. What I want to know is, how does this work in practice? Because it sounds great, but that's relying on the pilot having the discipline to execute that abort once on the runway, even in the takeoff roll. And what would it take? Is it a small wind shift, a little burble? They see the windstock start to move out of their peripheral vision? And what about if it's just after rotation? They start to feel the plane burble or sink. Do you abort on this runway, or do you just stick with it and power up and try and go? I mean, how does this really work in practice?
Sure. This takeoff plan is going to be more based on a pilot who may have encountered something like this before, and as I mentioned at the latter part of the scenario, has experience with expediting a takeoff. So if all of that is in place and the pilot is comfortable with the plan, that abort plan is probably unlikely to happen, and it would just be change in the wind or something goes wrong in directional control. That pilot should be comfortable in that abort plan.
So if I understand it right, it works because any little thing, anything that triggers the thought, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but tell me if I have this right, anything that triggers the thought, should I abort, is an abort. It's simply an instant, pull the power back, give it up. What about if this pilot has rotated and begun to climb out and then feels something in the airplane, feels starting to sink, or they feel a sudden change on the controls because of a wind shift that the plane is now adjusting to? Do they continue to go, or do they pull back the power and try and drop back onto the runway?
I think that once you've rotated with a limited amount of runway ahead of you, once you're airborne, it'll be too late to abort, and you'll have to continue the climb out as you plan with full power at the most suitable speed and going straight ahead. And if you do start feeling a wind shear at that point, you'll just have to climb out. You won't have a choice of aborting at that point. Again, based on the information we have with the weather, it's unlikely that a dangerous wind shear is going to occur right at that point, but that was the plan, to just get going before it gets worse.
Right, and I like what you said about if we're going to go, there is a certain window where we're going to be vulnerable, and if that's unacceptable, we can't go. Now, Wally, you're not going. Tell me why.
I'm going to go back in and get some more crackers out of the machine. There's just too much risk here for me. We're trying to rush this takeoff. This is an airplane that's relatively new to the pilot, so they may or may not be able to do a expedited takeoff, I think was the term you used. And I think the desire to do that could lead them to make a mistake or two. We know that the storm is closer than the next rad picture we have. We don't know exactly how close. It looks pretty benign out the window, but frankly, one of the things that has changed that causes me to say I'm not going to go is that wind going down to zero. It's been consistent out of the northeast, 040, 050. Now we look at the windsocks and there's no wind. That tells me that thunderstorm is affecting the weather at the airport already. And we just don't know when that gust front's going to come across, and I just don't think it's worth the risk. You can wait a couple hours, maybe an hour, and the storm will pass, and then you'll have a safe takeoff.
Or you'll be spending the night. This may be your window.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. You know, Catherine, you are also going, but you're going from the full length on 3-1. So what's the thinking behind taking full length on 3-1?
So first of all, I think this is only a go if the pilot can get in the air really pretty quickly. Other than that, I'm back with Wally getting crackers from the FBO. But I think 3-1 is the better choice here, because the pilot, I think, can get in a position to take off on 3-1 sooner if there are any other traffic in the pattern. Back taxiing for runway 04 could be problematic, so it's going to take you longer potentially to get to the point at which you're taking off on runway 4. Also, I like the longer runway. The extra 1,000 feet is helpful. With a change in wind, I could use that. I'd rather have the crosswind on runway 31 than a tailwind that might happen on runway 4. Again, runway 4 is only 4,000 feet long. So to me, if the pilot can get off the ground pretty soon on runway 31, that's the best choice.
Now, help me understand why you think full length is better than the intersection for 31, seeing as that would be quicker. You'd, you know, move up your time. The storm is moving during that time. Why is the trade-off full length better than getting in the air sooner to taxi all the way out to 31?
Yeah, I'm always a fan of full-length takeoffs, and I don't think that getting to the end of 3-1 is going to take very much longer, but getting to the takeoff position at runway 4 for full-length could take longer, like I said, if somebody else is in the pattern and you're not able to back taxi right away.
Let me ask you one more question while I have you on the hook here. During that role, are you looking at the storm and looking for rain and wind and grass? Are you looking at the windsock, or are you just focused on the takeoff and letting the airplane talk to you? Like, how would you actually do that once that power lever comes all the way up?
Yeah, I'm definitely having an eye on the windsock, and I'm definitely letting the airplane speak to me. I'm not going to focus on the storm. I assume that by the look of what I see out the window, I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on the windsock and the airplane.
Bob, you went with option 4. You're going to depart runway 22 towards the storm, but maybe with a little bit of variation. Walk me through your recommendation.
Jeff, I think the big concern here is a gust. If we're going to get a gust, it's likely going to be out of the southwest. A takeoff on runway 4 is going to make that a tailwind gust. Let's say we have a gust of 35 knots and we're on the takeoff roll. Our relative wind across the control surfaces is going to go to 0. We're going to have an immediate directional control problem. That airplane's going to go to the left for sure and off the runway. So to me, that's not a go. Same thing with a potential crosswind on a departure from 3-1. 35-knot gust is going to be tough at low airspeed on the takeoff roll. My thinking is you depart 2-2 if there is any gusting. It's a headwind. And I don't think you're going to be, in terms of minutes, much behind a takeoff from runway 4 or 3-1.
So let me stick with you a little bit longer here, Bob. You depart 2-2. How soon do you turn away from the huge pile of cumulo death that's like standing off the end of the runway that has made you so concerned, that's getting closer on the next rad? When do you turn? And does it matter when you, in your answer here, does it matter if it's still calm when you turn versus you lifted off because suddenly there was a gust and you're airborne? Does that change when you turn away from the storm? Give me both.
Well, I think I would climb to 400 AGL. I lower the nose, bring the airplane up to cruise climb airspeed. And this airplane is going to be about 90, 95 knots. Get that speed up and then make the turn.
So you're saying it's an advantage. You're willing to take less distance to the storm in order to have more airspeed to be able to handle any kind of gusts or shear.
Well, let me put it this way. If you depart on 2-2, you're not going to really be over the airport boundary on the southwest end by the time you reach 400 feet AGL. There's not a heck of a lot of difference there in terms of linear distance from the storm. That's the way I see it. But I do agree you could make a strong case for taxiing back and eating crackers, as Wally said. Certainly that's a viable option. I'm just afraid of the crosswind departure, and I'm afraid of the tailwind. 35 knots, you're rolling, 0 relative wind. You're going off the runway to the left side for sure.
John, you're with Elaine. You're departing runway 4. In fact, you're all in. You're departing runway 4, it looks like, here for this pilot in this situation. Is that true?
That's true. with some caveats. It's a very, very narrow window that you've got there to get out. And I like the way Elaine briefed the abort thing. I'm going to abort for all this specified conditions. Some of the advantages, I think, to departing on 4 over the other runways, you're back taxiing down 4, so you're looking to the southwest. You're looking right at that cell coming at you. Spin around and go. It would be the last chance you've got to look for signs of the approaching gust front. I'm looking for dust cloud. I'm looking at flags. I'm looking for trees rustling, all that stuff. If I see any of that, then it's over. But if I can't see that, if it's still 2-3 miles away, those indications of the gust front, I'm going to go and get out of Dodge. You know, taking off to the southwest, you're headed towards it. 3-1, you're going to the west and the storm is west of you. You're going to have to make a left turn out and you're turning back towards the storm. Within all that narrow window with all those constraints, I think it's a reasonable decision to go, but you got to be spring-loaded to abandon this and go back and join Wally at the snack machine.
Catherine.
So question, why do you have to make a left turn out if you take off on runway 3-1?
It's because it's left traffic.
You know, there's an interesting question right there. I mean, what supersedes here, right? You want to get as far away from that as possible. Sounds like, Catherine, you're turning right. I don't care what it says in the book.
And most people would, but, you
would,
know.
Would you, John? Or would you? You're in that airplane. You, for whatever reason,
no.
Maybe you were in the,
but,
Catherine was flying. She starts to turn to the right. You're like, oh, no, we can't do that.
No.
Catherine.
Although I'd depart straight out and then turn to the right on course. I don't see that that's at odds with
I think
any
you can do that if you clear the pattern. Yeah, I don't think there's anything that says you can't.
Sort of depends on how willing you are to make that turn a little bit early. I could definitely see the pressure of like 400 feet, 500 feet, and I'm turning and going even, let alone pattern altitude. But then again, I don't think there's an inspector on the ramp here. I'm willing to say that. So, you know,
and probably no other planes in the pattern.
And probably no other planes in the pattern. They're all back eating crackers with Wally. Mark.
I'm not worried about the right turn at all because the rule is left traffic for landing. It's not left traffic for departure. The only issue is what other traffic is there. And on this day, there's probably no other traffic to worry about.
Yeah, I think we can say we got the airport to ourselves here, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Now, Mark, you also like the departure from runway 4, but you're really on the line 4 or go back to the ramp, depending on the pilot, you were saying. So where's that? What's that all about?
Well, you know, Elaine already said that it has to be the ability, the pilot may have had some experience with this and everything like that. And I'm not worried about the time and type. 25 hours in an airplane is a reasonable amount of time, especially since the takeoff checklist for both the Cirrus that they usually fly and this airplane is essentially the same. You put on the fuel boost pump, you put the departure flaps on, and you go. So it's not a complicated airplane where you have to do a lot for a pre-takeoff checklist. You know, I think the most important things here are expedited and commitment. And actually, I've had a situation like this. We were en route to a fly-in. We were the only ones who had gotten as far as we did. And we see storms approaching. And this is down in New Mexico. And the thing about the Southwest is the weather never, ever gets better. If storms are coming in, they're going to be worse than you can imagine. And we stopped. This is well before ADS-B weather. I barely had a GPS in the airplane. And we stopped in Truth of Consequences, New Mexico, to kind of regroup. Perfect name.
Yeah, for a stop, for sure.
For a stop,
are you going
sure.
or are you not going?
Right. And we stopped. And, you know, the question was, gee, we may have to stay here. What kind of transportation is available? And the answer was none. And it was kind of, we got to get out of here. And there are storms approaching. We got to get back north toward Albuquerque. And we were faced with almost the identical situation, although only one runway. And it was, okay, everybody, in the plane, let's go. Expedited checklist, expedited to get out of here. And we were fine. And so it's so similar to the scenario that for a pilot who has experienced these kinds of things and can do it in an expedited way, I think this is the best choice.
Sticking with you, Mark, for a second, had you ever practiced or done before, or really more importantly, had you practiced an expedited checklist, or did you make that up on the fly for yourself?
Oh, I
just kind of rush it.
I had used an expedited checklist. I mean, I had been using a flow pre-departure checklist, followed up by a very quick review of what the written checklist is, and it's very quick to do it that way.
I want to round the table here, kind of a poll. How many people here are really comfortable with that idea of a expedited checklist? Is you're moving through it quickly, but with some kind of control, right? That's almost an oxymoron, particularly, I would say, in a single pilot cockpit. Is this something we should be advocating, or are we encouraging people to rush through something? And if there is a good way to do this, what is that?
Well, I think in my case, my expedited checklist is my normal checklist. I mean, it is a flow. I mean, on these aircraft, it's one where you basically run down the buttons. They should be in the right places, in the right positions, and you get set to go. And then in my case, I pick up the paper checklist, and I take a quick look, and I go, yep, as I go down the items, and it's done. So it's standard for me to do it that way.
Catherine.
Yeah, I agree completely. And in fact, I rewrote my checklist. Anytime I make a change in the airplane, I rewrite my checklist so that it takes advantages of the flow that I can use in the plane that's efficient and that works. And that has served me very well.
Elaine.
The expedited checklist, I think, has a really great purpose for flights that are not the first flight of the day. So perhaps you've got things already set up for that quicker turn or quicker takeoff. And so there's nothing wrong with an efficient flow, especially when you do verbal callouts, because you can do those very quickly and call it out to yourself while you're doing your flow. And that can really help ensure you're not forgetting any essential items.
Wally.
A few years ago, the airlines changed their procedures, and you probably notice it when you ride on them now. After they get pushed back, they do the taxi checklist before they call for their taxi clearance. You'll see them exercise the flight controls, the flaps go to the takeoff position. All that is done on the ramp while the airplane is sitting still. I hear these terms about expedited checklists here around the table, and they do that because they don't want to be distracted with a taxi issue. And it sounds to me like, I'm not sure, maybe I could ask this question. What would cause you to do an expedited checklist rather than a normal checklist? What are the circumstances that would cause that? An approaching thunderstorm?
Bob. I don't like the term expedited checklist. That's redundant to me. A checklist is a checklist, and you do the checklist properly. You don't have two checklists. One checklist is a normal checklist, and another is an expedited checklist. I don't like that. That's cruising for a bruising. At some point, you're going to miss something. You need to go through things methodically, and missing stuff... very easy to do, and depending on what it is, it could be serious consequences as a result. So I'm a normal checklist, and you do the checklist as you always do it. If time is of such an essence here, you're not going. You're going to go back and eat crackers, and that's going to be the way it is.
John?
Well, in the scenario setup, one of the things that it says is that you stop and do your run-up right there on the ramp. So the run-up, we're assuming that your pre-takeoff checklist is complete before you even make the decision to go or not. So the magnetos have been checked and all that. One of the things that I do in my airplane is I have another checklist I call the runway items. It's the killer stuff, trim, flaps, fuel. And that's the expedited thing that you would do at the end of the runway before you bring in the power. Transponder on, lights on, you know, and people have all different variations of that, but it's a runway checklist.
Bob.
Some people call that a lineup checklist.
Yeah,
we call
exactly.
It a lineup checklist.
Right, right. And we call the runway items.
Right,
same thing.
It's the runway items. And so different checklist, though.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's the last chance.
And I like what you said, it's the killer items, right? And I think we're actually all homing in on something. I spent some time on it really for clarity. I don't think anyone is in disagreement that there's the methodical moving forward with things, watching the storm coming in, moving through the checklist, the procedures, and now there's a point where we've got to decide to go. And okay, we've made a decision to taxi out and go. Now we're going to move through the procedure that we know well in a cockpit flow. And that seemed to me be what you were saying, Elaine, is as long as this pilot has a good flow in the airplane, that is a sufficient short thing to be able to do. They don't have to spend a lot of time on it, and they can minimize that window of exposure. And that helps. This is, as Mark said, not a particularly complicated airplane. Does this change for people with the airplane? Because the DA-40 isn't that complicated. It's also fairly light wing loading and has a free castering nose wheel. So without authority on the flight controls, all we have is the brakes. And if as soon as the weight comes off those wheels, that's it. We better be airborne. Just as soon as they're unloading, the brakes will just lock. So does that matter? Is this a good airplane for this? A bad airplane for this? Would you do it differently in a bigger aircraft, but then it would be more complicated? How much does the airplane factor in? Or is it just every airplane has its gains and losses here? Bob?
Well, I think all airplanes are affected by a tailwind. And if you look at some charts in various POHs, you'll see that a two-knot tailwind might increase your takeoff distance 10%. So certainly if you get a 20, 30, or 35-knot tailwind, you're going off the far end unless you've got some very long runway ahead of you. So the tailwind issue here is what bugs me. That's my big concern.
It makes a lot of sense. Is there also something to, once we depart this airport, this is kind of an airport of no return, right? If there's an issue after departure, even has nothing to do with the storm, can we come back to an airport with an approaching storm? And is that part of the departure? Is that something that people commonly think about around the table? Catherine, I see you nodding over here. I'd love to have you address that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Once you leave this airport, you're not going back to this airport. But you have a lot to choose from along your way. So, yeah, I don't think you're going back.
Do you need to have picked a specific place to go? Or is it one of these? Should that have been part of that pre-takeoff departure? I know I'm not coming back, so I'm going to pick something spring-loaded to go? Or is it like, I'm going to go, and then I'm going to figure it out in the air if suddenly the engine starts running rough on departure?
Absolutely. I think that's always part of a takeoff briefing, is if I have problems with my plane after liftoff, where am I going to put it down? You're not going to put it down at this airport. You're going to go to another airport, which you have already chosen along your route.
Did you have something to add there, Bob? I just saw your...
No, I think Catherine covered it pretty much. Your takeoff alternate's got to be planned. It might be the same airport, depending on the situation. If so, you set up the approaches even before you get on the runway so that you can come back in if you need to.
One more question around the table here. How many people here routinely use a specific abort point, whether that's time or space or a place that they have preloaded in their mind? Or is it more of a rolling thing? Is it only in certain situations? Catherine's raising her hand. She uses a specific abort point?
Yeah, every time. And it's always a point along the runway. So I always know if I'm not rotated by this point, I'm going to reduce the throttle and just bring it back to a stop.
John?
Same thing. At my home airport, we actually have a stripe painted across the runway at the midpoint. And if you're not at rotation speed by then, and more importantly, if the mains aren't on the ground on landing by that same stripe, we're going around.
Bob?
I like to think of it as any abnormal situation. Anything that's unusual, noise, smell, vibration, abort. If you're on the runway, abort. So it's more than just an engine failure. It's anything that's unusual. You're much better off dealing with it on the ground than departing the airport and then trying to figure out what the heck's going on. So, in the bigger airplanes, below 80 knots, any yellow light, which is an abnormal light, abort and figure it out later. May not be anything real serious, but on the other hand, it's an abnormal now. It could become an emergency in a few more seconds.
Elaine, I know you use an abort point on a regular basis.
Yes, yeah, so in light aircraft, abort points along the runway or runway marking are just a real simple way to make sure you're off on rotation about halfway down the runway, depending on the length.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I didn't use one until I moved to Colorado. And you start going into mountain airports, and you better have an abort point. And generally, it's that midpoint of the runway. The rule of thumb is 70% of your takeoff speed within 50% of the runway. And I've used that. Now, of course, there it also depends on runway length. Over at Centennial, if I'm taking off on the main runway, it's a 12,000-foot runway. I can go much further and have, because I have had a power reduction on takeoff and landed on the remaining runway and even had time to troubleshoot before I landed on the remaining runway. So there is some variation based upon amount, but other than that, generally, halfway down the runway, if things aren't going right, you better stop right then.
Wally?
I know it's the thing to say that you have it, that you do it, but I don't do it. And I understand that it's a recommended procedure. But for me, the abort point varies with the airplane. If I'm flying my Champ, I'm airborne at 30 miles an hour. And I can abort for a long time flying down that 5,000-foot runway I have. So I don't make a point. If I had a serious emergency, I would land. If I ran off the far end of the runway, I'd have to take that as a consequence. If I had a flight control problem or something. If I'm in a multi-engine airplane, I have a takeoff briefing, and it's different. And that go-no-go decision in a multi-engine piston-powered airplane would be configuration. If the gear is up and we have blue line, we're going to continue. If it's not up and we don't have blue line, we're going to land and take whatever comes after that. If it's a jet, as you pointed out, Bob, you work out a decision speed that gives you a balanced field length. So to me, it depends on what I'm flying and where I'm flying.
Mark.
Yeah, and I think I agree with that. I mean, you know, you have runway length and you also have the issue in terms of what you're flying. And you should have some idea what your takeoff distance should be every time you get on the runway. And if that's not happening, you need to abort.
You know, one of the things around the table here that's really interesting is it's just interesting to me how long this discussion is going, and we still haven't even really dug into the weather itself. There is so much to talk about here, and yet this is such a common kind of situation. And one of the things that maybe we'll talk about in the hangar discussion about the weather itself, it's something that a lot of pilots really aren't taught, and they find out in situations like this. Hopefully they don't find out because they've got the accident inspector coming out, and hopefully they don't find out because they read about somebody else's crash, because situations like this can kill. There is real legitimate danger here, and there is a real legitimate danger about something, let's call it get out of here-itis, right? I'm really trying to get out of this airport, and if I just can get in the air, it'll be fine. But I like what Elaine said. First, you have to decide, is a small window that I can't control, is that small window acceptable to me? No, I go back to the ramp. Yes, I can continue. Am I rushing along here before I commit? If I'm rushing, slow down. If I'm going through my checklists, doing my run-up, I'm good. And then that last decision, am I competent, comfortable in the airplane, and am I spring-loaded to deal with something that comes up in that small window? Yes, I'm going, and I'm on my way, and I'm going to abort from that plan if anything goes wrong. And if I'm not ready for that, if I'm not proficient in the airplane, if I don't have smooth cockpit flows that I should be using every time, then I don't get that opportunity here to exercise a departure before I run out of time.